This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Donald Trump has called for an unconditional surrender of the Islamic regime and Iran's Khamenei rejected the call. He rejected the call for unconditional surrender. But why? Is it possible even? Is it even possible for Iran, led by Khamenei, the master of Islam, is it even possible for them to even consider surrender to the West, to Israel, their archenemy, and to America, the great Satan? Not likely. So today on Viewpoint, we're going to talk about why that is and where things stand right now. As bombs are screaming through the air and sirens are sounding in Israel, all over the place in Tel Aviv, and yet the firepower goes on. It's a new shock and awe campaign. Just as what happened back there in Iraq, now it is a similar kind of situation between Israel and Iran. But will America enter the war? President Donald Trump said the United States knows where Iran's Ayatollah al-Khamenei is hiding, calling him an easy target. But he adds he's not looking to kill him for the time being. He said, we know exactly where the so-called supreme leader is hiding. But we're not going to take him out, at least not for now. Well, what would happen if they did take him out? And would Mr. Khamenei actually preempt being taken out by taking himself out so that he would not be said to have surrendered in the name of Allah? It's a big deal, friends. It's much bigger than most of us would think, because we don't think in those terms, but they do. So Iran's Khamenei has rejected Donald Trump's call for unconditional surrender. He said peace or war could not be imposed on the Islamic Republic. He said intelligent people who know Iran, the Iranian nation, and its history will never speak to this nation in threatening language because the Iranian nation will not surrender. So Trump and his team are considering a number of options, which include joining Israel in strikes against Iranian nuclear sites, and particularly the Fordham site that is deep underground, the premier nuclear site in Iran. Well, apparently there are some hints that Iran wants to talk, but Donald Trump has responded saying, it's late to be talking. Very late to be talking. Israel likely would need U.S. assistance to take out Iran's Fordow fuel enrichment plant, an underground uranium enrichment facility, huge. And for 40 years, they've been saying death to America, death to Israel. So President Trump was asked whether it was too late for Iran to enter the negotiations for a new nuclear agreement and an end to the current conflict. Nothing's too late, said Trump. But he said, it's very late. It's very late to be talking. It's like the song of yesteryear, it's too late to say you're sorry. Wasn't exactly in geopolitical context, but the phrase came to my mind, it's too late to say you're sorry. Mike Huckabee, ambassador to Israel, has urged Donald Trump to listen to the only one voice that matters, God's voice. He sent him a text or a letter and with high, high accolades for Mr. Trump and what he is doing, and concluded with saying, it's my honor to serve you. I believe you will hear from heaven, and that voice is far more important than mine or anyone else's. You sent me to Israel to be your eyes, ears, and voice, and to make sure our flag flies above our embassy, and my job is to be the last one to leave, and I will not abandon this post. You did not seek this moment, said Huckabee. this moment sought you. All of that here today on Viewpoint. I'm so glad that you've joined us. It's conversation, as always, with ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And I trust that today there will be elements of, yes, indeed, conviction. You say, how could that possibly be? I'm not Muslim. I'm not Jewish. I'm not this. I'm not that. I don't really have a dog in this fight. I don't have a horse in this race. And so why should I care? I got enough problems on my own plate here on these shores. I can understand that. I really can understand that. Believe me, you're not the only one with problems, enough problems on their plate. So my plate is as full as it can be. On the other hand, these other things are going on, and they're very significant. And we need to have some kind of understanding of what is going on, why it's going on, and why this issue of unconditional surrender may be unconditionally impossible. Can Islam surrender? Iran once ruled the world. Well, it was Persia that once ruled the world. First it was Babylon, and then the Persians took over, ruled the world. Continually, they were massively ruling the world until Alexander the Great came over and undid the rulership of Persia. And then following Alexander the Great came Rome. And the Bible seems to indicate that Rome would be the last ruling empire before the second coming of Jesus Christ. It was the ruling empire when Christ came the first time, and it will be the ruling empire when he returns. But not according to Khomeini. According to Ali Khomeini, Islam will rule the world. In fact, Allah has told him that Islam will rule the world, has made it clear. Muhammad made it clear. The Hadith made it clear. The Quran made it clear. And that's their viewpoint. And viewpoint always determines destiny. It directs destiny. So we need to understand Iran's viewpoint. We need to understand Khomeini's viewpoint. Khomeini's viewpoint is not the same as all of the Iranian people. But there was a revolution that took place in 1979, as I recall. 1979. It had a tremendous effect upon the world. Around 50 of America's people were taken captive for about 50 days there in Iran. The son of our then pastor was among those who was taken captive, and we had regular prayer sessions for him and for all that had been taken captive. And the whole purpose of the Iranian Revolution was to be the Islamic Revolution. It wasn't really an Iranian revolution, it was an Islamic revolution. So that Islam would rule the world, beginning with Iran, as Louis Farrakhan once said, when he went over to Iran to talk with the then president, he said, Iran is the vanguard of the Islamic revolution. If that's true, can they surrender?
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Welcome you back to Viewpoint. Today we're taking a look at Iran, formerly known as Persia until 1935, and once ruled by the Shah of Iran, who was, shall we say, replaced by a coup by the Islamic Revolution through Khomeini and his cohorts. And since 1979 has been ruled, Iran has been known as the Republic of Iran. And one wonders, is it really a republic? What does that mean? Well, the reality is it's ruled by the Ayatollahs, the Muslim clerics. They combined both secular and religious authority and power. And it's exclusive religious authority and power. That's the whole idea of Islam. There are a lot of different ideas about Islam, but not so much within Islam. Islam is what it is. But what is it? We want to talk about that here in greater detail in just a few minutes. But before we do, it was the Shah who was deposed back there at the time of the Islamic Revolution. And now the son of the Shah, Reza Pahlavi, has come forward. He said the future is bright. We're going to pass through this sharp turn in history. So as President Donald Trump considers having U.S. armed forces join Israel in its effort to end Iran's development of nuclear weapons, this exiled crown prince of Iran says the Islamic Republic has come to its end and is collapsing. Reza Pahlavi said of Iran's supreme leader, Khamenei, he's like a frightened rat. He's gone into hiding, underground, and has lost control. What has begun, said Pahlavi, is irreversible. Is it? Pahlavi posted a video of himself speaking Farsi, that's the language the Persians speak, but also included an English version pleading with Iranian citizens to rise up and overthrow the current dictator's regime. He said the regime's apparatus of repression is falling apart. All it takes now is a nationwide uprising to put an end to this nightmare once and for all. Now is the time to rise, he said, the time to reclaim Iran. Well, I will understand Mr. Pahlavi's position, especially being the son of the former Shah. But what is it that's lurking in the background that is very, very powerful to overcome? It's the Quranic view of Islam. The fundamentalist view of Islam. What real Islam is, not just a generalized religious and cultural system, but a actual deeply fundamentalist belief system that combines both religion and civil government. They're all merged together, thereby effectuated through Sharia law. Sharia law, then, is what is seeking to be imposed and has been imposed by Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution on the Iranian people, and is being sought to be imposed upon all people. All people. Now, how is that possible? Well, that's the viewpoint. And if you don't understand the viewpoint, it's very hard to comprehend the dynamics of what is taking place and why it might not be as easy to deal with the situation as we might think. It's not like any other situation. Hitler was bad enough, but Islam is many times worse because it's profoundly religiously oriented, not just culturally oriented, but religiously oriented. And that religion is a culture. It's both a culture and a religion that is uniting, well, about 1.6 billion people on the planet right now. Did you know that Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world? Much faster growing than Christianity. Did you know that? It's true. Those are the latest figures that have just come out in the last couple weeks. So apart from the Christian faith, Islam is the most influential religion in the world. With approximately 1.6 billion followers, Islam is the correct name for the religion of Muhammad, while Muslim describes a follower of Islam. And Islam dominates over 50% of the countries on three continents. In other words, this is vast. It's not just Iran. It's not just Turkey. Mr. Erdogan in Turkey, he wants to rule the world as well. He doesn't much like Iran because Iran wants to rule the world as the vanguard of the Islamic revolution. So Khomeini, from his viewpoint, says, look, Persia wants to rule the world, and we're going to rule it again because Muhammad has ordained it. Islam, or through Allah, has ordained that Islam will rule the world. And Iran is the one to initiate that rulership. And Iran is the one to usher in the Islamic Messiah called the 12th Imam, or the Mahdi. That being the case, where is the place then, where is the room for Khomeini to enter into an unconditional surrender? It's impossible. Because to do so would be denying everything that he claims to believe from cover to cover, the cover too of the Quran and the Hadith and all the other writings that he preaches with absolute dogma at the point of the sword. Islam does not maintain its, shall we say, advance its kingdom through general free belief. It advances the kingdom of Allah through the point of the sword, through threatenings and slaughterings, not through voluntary submission. Yet the word Islam means submission. Did you know that? As Christians, we understand that God gives room for us to submit to him, that our wills are necessary to conform to his will voluntarily. So he does not compel us to believe. He gives us the open invitation, but he doesn't compel us. On the other hand, Islam, by its very definition of submission, means to compel belief and submission at the point of the sword. And if you do not, there will be supreme consequences. Now, that having been said, we're going to take a look a little bit deeper about Islam. And we're going to look back a little bit, even 20 years or so, to see what has actually been developing, because all of this began to come to the head again about 20 years ago. Muhammad, who lived from AD 570 to 632 AD, claimed to have received visions or supernatural revelations of God from Allah through the angel Gabriel. And those revelations were compiled into a book called the Quran. And there are two principal schools of Islam. The majority of Muslims are the Sunnis, that's 90%, and the minority are the Shiites, that's 10%. There are also millions of Muslim mystics called the Sufis. The overtly belligerent black Muslim movement, Nation of Islam, led by Louis Farrakhan, has dominated in America, although in the past, say, 20 years, more traditional Islam has grown rather significantly to perhaps maybe 7 or 8% of the population. And it claims to be the fastest growing religion in the world. So let's again go back to the meaning, the heart, and the soul of Islam. It is submission. And it's this defining term and the full implications of that term that the Western world doesn't seem to grasp, either knowingly or negligently, either intentionally or through massive interpretive deception born of political correctness, religious pluralism, and multiculturalism. It's as if the West has voluntarily blindfolded itself to the religious, political, and indeed global implications and intent that's woven into the Mohammedan submission. You see, it's not the kind of submission that Paul talked about wives submitting themselves to their own husbands as unto Christ. This is a different kind of submission. This is an imposed submission under threat of force. Now, we're not here to discuss all of the theological treaties of the religion of Muhammad, but to distill, I think, from the details an understanding that's sufficiently honest and just and practically enabling us to discern the grave dangers that are lurking in these certainly ominous clouds gathering across the world. And so lightning is about to strike. Maybe it's already struck. And when it does, global conflagration is going to be ignited. So it's going to be a winner-take-all battle. You see, Islam is not in this to share rulership in the world. Islam is in this to fulfill what they believe is the command of Allah, that Islam will and must rule the world under Sharia law, and there is no other option. There is no other option. That's Khomeini's viewpoint. That's the spirit of the Islamic revolution. Now, you say, well, there are many Muslims out there that don't necessarily share that. That's true. Just like there are many Christians, professing Christians out there that don't necessarily embrace everything the Bible says. They just call themselves Christians. Maybe they're cultural Christians. Maybe they grew up in a Christian home. Maybe they grew up in America and therefore call themselves Christians, whatever it is. But they don't really, truly believe what the Bible says. There are very few professing Christians that really, truly believe what the Bible says. Very, very few. In this country, arguably, somewhere around 8%. That's a generous appraisal, around 8%. But even at that, the majority of them do not even truly embrace everything that the Bible has to say and disagree with a lot of things that Jesus says and form their own viewpoints. So you can see that even in American Christianity or churchianity, we've got the same kind of problem that Islam has. A lot of the people are cultural Muslims. They were born in a Muslim country. We have neighbors that are, for the most part, cultural Muslims. And they have their, you know, their Muslim holidays and so on. And they're very, very nice people. Great people. I dare say that they are not following the spirit of Ali Khamenei in Iran. Likewise, many of the people in Iran are not. But they're still Muslims, most of them. So they have a tension between what they say they believe as Muslims, but really don't embrace the fullness of what they say they believe like Khamenei does. And those of the Islamic revolution. So what we're looking at here is part of the great battle for King of the Mountain. That's what we're looking at. Part of the great battle for King of the Mountain, because ultimately Islam has decreed it will rule the world from the Temple Mount. Did you know that? You just might want to get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain, the Eternal Epic End Time Battle. $20 book, yours for $15. It's on the website, saveus.org.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Today, we're looking at this call for surrender, unreserved surrender, absolute surrender made by President Donald Trump to Khamenei, heading up the supreme leader of Iran under Islam. Can there be an unreserved surrender? I contend there cannot be. It's impossible, because for Khamenei to engage in what would be called such an unreserved, unconditional surrender would be to deny openly, publicly, egregiously deny everything that he has preached and stood for since 1979 of the Islamic Revolution. Can he do that? What would be his reputation then? How would that be received throughout the Muslim world? How would Mr. Erdogan there in Turkey, who has tried to turn Turkey into a fundamentalist Islamic state just like Khamenei, how would he take it? Would he say, okay, see, now Khamenei, Iran could not be the leader as the Quran has called for, and now Turkey will be the leader. We once ruled the world too. And now we're going to rule the world. They couldn't do it. They denied Allah. They unconditionally surrendered to the powers of Christianity and the Jews. Therefore, we're now going to stand in the gap, and we're going to carry the flag of Islam. I can see Mr. Erdogan doing such a thing. Muslims believe that there is only one true God and that his name is Allah. They say there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. Not one of his prophets, but his prophet. So that's their creed. Unlike the Christian faith, however, Islam does not rely upon personal conviction leading one to conversion of heart and voluntary submission to our Creator through Jesus Christ. Instead, Islam demands submission to Allah. The world and its peoples will either voluntarily submit to Sharia law, the governing code of Islam, or do so by force or threat of force at the point of a sword or a nuclear weapon. And there's the problem. That's why Iran needs the nuclear weapon. And how they have been allowed to go this far without stopping it is mind-boggling. But push came to shove, and Israel began to realize the end was near. Within a matter of days, Iran had the ability to produce a nuclear weapon or several, and we're not going to allow that. So Israel made the preemptive attack to hit the various nuclear sites, hoping that Iran would submit and be willing to enter into an agreement to cease and desist all nuclear development. But they refused, because they need the nuclear development, the ultimate sword, in order to impose Islam on the world. That's their viewpoint. And viewpoint determines destiny. So, let's go back 24 years. Remember 9/11? What a day that was. Changed the world. George W. Bush was America's president, declared following that infamous attack on the World Trade Center towers and the U.S. Pentagon and the Capitol that Islam is a peaceful religion that was hijacked by terrorist extremists. When he said that, he either knowingly or negligently misstated the truth. Then when Britain's then Prime Minister, Tony Blair, catering to the West's dominating deception of political correctness, religious pluralism, and multiculturalism, said that when anyone thinks of Islam, their first thought should be a peace, tolerance, and force for good. So he blatantly blinded his fellow Brits to reality. Both of those presidents did. In an interview with Muslim News, the Prime Minister boasted he had no truck or problem with at all with those who suggest that conflict is inevitable between Islam and the West. He said he wants the Muslim community to feel fully accepted and catered for in Britain. And so Mr. Blair assured the world, as the founder of the Faith Foundation, dedicated to unite the religions of the world so as to undergird what he called the emerging New World Order, that he reads his Quran as a good Roman Catholic every day. Talk about syncretism, religious syncretism. Here's the problem, friends. The world and its leaders have to quickly face and admit the unspeakable reality, and that is that Islam, as its very core, is mandated by Muhammad, his Quran, and every legit, and the supporting hadith to rule the world and to bring every nation, every religion, and every person inhabiting the planet under the rulership of a global caliphate that will undemocratically impose Sharia law with impunity under the expected Mahdi, that is, the Islamic Messiah. So, it's the unvarnished warning truth, I think, is knocking really loudly right now and insistently at the door of every president, every prime minister, every pastor, every priest, and yes, the Pope himself. You can really hear the deafening clash of cultures and the, shall we say, the swords now in their final formation for a battle beyond the belief of Tony Blair's and George Bush's and Barack Obama's of the world and the former putative president of the United States. One wonders if he really was. But in any event, we don't go into that today. The reality is there is a call, a final worldwide call to jihad. Jihad. And there's nothing more than, and jihad is nothing more than what you might call sanctified hatred. It's the sixth mandate on the head and heart of every true Muslim follower of Muhammad, under authority of the Quran and the Hadith, the unequivocal, inescapable call to global jihad or holy war. And under Islamic law, there are only two types of nations: a nation that is of the House of Islam or a nation that is of the House of War. True Muslim believes that the whole world is his home and that he is commanded to submit the world to the authority of Islam. Therefore, all nations and peoples who have not submitted to date to Islam and Sharia law are subject to the vengeance of holy war or jihad. It's not a joke. And it should not be received with jocularity. It's jihad. And it's deadly serious. As the world is just now discovering, somewhat sheepishly and reluctantly, due to the paralyzing constraints of what I call the unholy trinity of political correctness, multiculturalism, religious pluralism, that has prevented the Western world from identifying Islam for what it really is. So, we might want to let the Quran speak for itself, which we're going to do in just a few moments. But before we do, I want to urge you again, if you do not have the book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle, I urge you to get a copy of it. No, you cannot get it from Amazon. It's not there. Used to be years ago, it's not there. The last book was purchased about a month ago. The only place you can get this book now, if you want a nice new copy, is to get it from our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org. The King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle, for said that he who rules the Temple Mount will rule the world. That's really what it's all about. And when you read this book, you're going to have your eyes opened to see how for 6,000 years, even before that, starting in the heavenlies, how the battle began to rage concerning the final rulership of the world from the Temple Mount. A $20 book, yours for $15. It's on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. Okay, what does the Quran speak about this matter of the focus of jihad to overcome people who do not accept Islam? Are you ready? Those who reject Islam must be killed. If they turn back from Islam, take them and kill them wherever you find them. In other words, you cannot convert to Christianity without being killed. It's a mandate. You will and must be killed. Can you see how massive persecution arises to anyone who once was deemed to be a Muslim and converts to Christ? Hard to imagine that, isn't it, as an American? So when you meet those who disbelieve Islamic teaching, smite their necks till when you have killed and wounded many of them, then bind a bond firmly and take them as captives. In other words, Islamic mandated slavery. And then also from the noble Quran, O you who believe, fight those of the disbelievers who are close to you and let them find harshness in you. Not love, harshness. Background and belief form the basis for the battle of King of the Mountain. They're inseparable. And that's what we're facing here. That's what our president, that's what Netanyahu are facing right now. They just can't talk about it in these terms.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, I'll build my church. Is Christ by his Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, behold how they loved one another. Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Why can't Khamenei, Ali Khamenei, the supreme leader of Iran, submit and surrender to Israel and the United States? Why? Well, we're finding out why. Because he's absolutely committed, as are all of those who follow him and enable them to rule Iran with an iron sword or a gun They're absolutely committed to what the Quran says and the Hadiths. They believe it's all true and that they're destined to rule the world, and they cannot comprehend a possibility that that might not be true. Because to not believe that is to completely undermine everything that they have said they absolutely believed from cover to cover and the cover too about the Quran and about Muhammad and about the coming of the Islamic Mahdi, Messiah, who will rule the world and turn Jesus into his pawn, Jesus whom they call Isa. That's where the problem is. And our political leaders cannot talk about this, because then it's as if they're turning against a religion when we supposedly have freedom of religion. So how in the world can you possibly turn against religion, a religion, and still call yourself a democratic nation? That's the problem, the conundrum. Yet a pastor just appeared on his podcast in the last week or two and declared that from his viewpoint, it would be impossible for a Muslim, a true Muslim, to constitutionally become president of the United States. Why? Because he could not swear to protect the Constitution and the peoples of the United States according to the principles of the Constitution. He couldn't do it because he's dedicated to the lordship of the Quran and bringing about that domination through the point of the sword, not through elections, the point of the sword. Very interesting point, isn't it? So let's talk a little bit about jihad and jurisdiction. For the true Muslim, there's only one way to guarantee entrance into paradise. Only one way to know for sure that you're going to get into paradise is to die in jihad. In other words, die while fighting the enemy. That is anybody other than true believers in Islam. Jihad simply means that Muslims are required to fight the enemy of Allah until the enemies die or Muslims die. Now can you see why Khomeini cannot surrender? They're required to fight the enemies until either the enemies die or the Muslims die. And all who are not Muslims are deemed from their viewpoint to be infidels or the enemy. And if we don't understand that, which is critical for all non-Muslims to comprehend, to accept at face value their viewpoint of Islam. It's indeed the Islamic missionary method. If they will not submit as conquered, they must die, for Allah will not countenance any resistance. And even the resistance of conscience is not recognized. If we really understand jihad in this way, that is defined in legal terms by the Islamic fiqh, consider this. Jihad is fighting anybody who stands in the way of spreading Islam, or fighting anyone who refused to enter Islam based on the Surah 839 of the Quran. So, interestingly, Islam is not just a religion, it's a government. Also, Islam teaches that Allah is the only authority, therefore political systems must be based on Allah's teaching and nothing else. People fighting jihad, therefore, have to consider themselves to have succeeded when a nation declares Islam as both their religion and their form of government. And because of this belief system, Islam gains jurisdiction over the nations and the world through jihad. That's how Muhammad and his crew almost took over all of Europe. Until 700-something AD, Islam was on the verge of taking over all of Europe, and they were stopped. In France. So for a genuine Muslim, Allah gains supreme jurisdiction over the planet and his peoples when the worship of Allah is universal with no resistance, and the rule of Sharia law is universal with no resistance. So you can see the very concept of democracy or a republic, a true republic, democratic republic, as a form of government is fundamentally inconsistent with the Islamic belief, governmental way of existence. So it shouldn't be a mystery, I think, that a genuine democratic form of government can neither thrive nor survive wherever Islam has become deeply rooted. Only brutal dictators have been able to restrain the insurgent violent force of those who employ jihad to advance and enforce true Islamic life and jurisdiction. Western dreams such as, you know, democratic freedoms are an illusion driven either by ignorance or intentional rejection of reality due to the thought-paralyzing constraints, I think, of political correctness. To persist in embracing those kinds of hopes is not only irrational and irreconcilable with Islamic belief, but is profoundly pernicious or deadly for the rest of the planet. So, please understand that the battle for King of the Mountain is now being fully engaged. Ultimately, that's what this is. This is one massive demonstration of this battle for King of the Mountain, because Islam intends to rule the world from the Temple Mount, as they have declared. Now, somebody might say, well, I hear that, that Islam is really a peaceful religion because you can find in the Quran things that are peaceful. Well, it's true, you can. So let me explain this to you. The Prophet Muhammad's life in Mecca was mostly about prayer and meditation. So the verses of the Quran that were written or revealed in Mecca talk about peace and cooperation. But a major change took place in Medina. The mandate of Muhammad changed dramatically. In Medina, Muhammad became militant and reverted to violence and invasion as the means to propagate his so-called prophetic purpose and exemplify his power. So that's when jihad was born. 60% of the Quranic verses talk about jihad, which stands to reason because Muhammad supposedly received most of the Quran after he left Mecca. So jihad became the basic power and driving force of Islam. The problem is, unfortunately, to the average reader, that surahs in the Quran are not organized chronologically as to which were prompted or penned in Mecca and which were inspired or written in Medina. While there are some versions of the Quran which identify which verse as to where it was revealed, whether Mecca or Medina, normally a reader has to consult more scholarly Islamic references in order to know. So Muhammad's message, for its radically contradictive moving from Mecca to Medina, is very difficult for the average reader to figure out. So religious pluralists and multiculturalists are bound by political correctness and invariably invoke the peaceful platitudes of Mecca, ignoring purposely the far greater and later vitriolic and violent provocations coming from Medina. So how then are the vast differences resolved and rationalized within Islam? How did the Jew and the Christian, the other people of the book, so to speak, become transformed from friend to foe so as to become the implacable and eternal enemies of Islam, destined to be eradicated from the earth? Well, Islamic scholars bridge the disconnect. It was accomplished by the principle of nasq, which means to resolve contradictions, new revelations would be deemed to override all previous revelations. There are at least 114 verses in the Quran that speak of love, peace, and forgiveness. But when Surah 9.5 was later revealed, it canceled out all those 114 previous verses. So consider, as we wrap up, the global implications of this verse in the context of the battle for King of the Mountain. Here it is. Fight and slay pagans, that is, non-Muslims, wherever you find them, and seize them, beleaguer them, lie in wait for them in every stratagem of war. That's known as the verse of the sword, and it explains that Muslims must fight anyone who chooses not to convert to Islam. It's considered to be the final development of jihad in Islam. So this principle of nasq, that's spelled N-A-S-K-H, is very strong. And if a verse is nasq or overwritten, it is as if that verse doesn't even exist, even though you can read it. So jihad has thus become the basic power and driving force of Islam. I hope this is somewhat helpful. And if you want to find out more about this in at least understandable detail, you might want to get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain. There's a chapter called Muhammad versus the Pope. Muhammad versus the Pope, you might find that very interesting as well, particularly for Roman Catholics who listen to this program, which they do. So, the book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle, is a $20 book, yours available for $15 on our website. You will not be able to get this book on Amazon. The last book was sold about a month ago. The last book was sold about a month ago on Amazon. So now, if you want a copy of this book, which you should want, because it's going to open to you the vast array of how things are developing prophetically and geopolitically for the past 6,000 years to today, it's eye-opening, and it will help you to prepare your own heart. It really will. Because ultimately, the question is, who rules upon the throne of your heart? Because the Temple Mount itself becomes somewhat of a symbol for where God rules. And ultimately, he doesn't rule in temples made with hands. He rules in the heart of men, at least those who voluntarily submit to his rule and reign. Get a copy of the book, King of the Mountain, on our website, saveus.org. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries. P.O. Box 70879. Richmond, Virginia, 23255. Writing a check at $6 for postage and handling. I don't think you're going to be disappointed, friends. Don't try to read it all in one evening, but you'll be glad you did. That is, you got the book. God bless. Become a partner. Do it today, and don't delay.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.